I gamble on your love, baby, and got a losing hand.
50 years ago this month, the 22-year-old Ray Charles recorded his song Losing Hand in the small New York offices of Atlantic Records. It was a makeshift studio, 5 floors above a restaurant. Desks were pushed aside, and a piano was brought in for Brother Ray. Starting in the late 1940s, when high-fidelity recording became more accessible, studios across the country recorded some of America's most beloved music. Studios such as Sun or Stax in Memphis, Universal in Chicago, United Western in Hollywood, or RCA-B Studio in Nashville. There are among 15 studios described in a new book, Temples of Sound, Inside the Great Recording Studios. William Bob Clark and Jim Cogan are co-authors of the book. Cogan says Chicago's Chess Records Studio, where great blues legends recorded, was an example of how these studios brought together diverse groups of people.
That was a space where you had this confluence of cultures, Leonard Chess and his brother Phil Chess, immigrants from Poland, with largely African-American musicians coming up the Illinois Central Railroad from the Delta. And this colliding of cultures, you put them in a room, you lock the doors, and you stir it up, and out comes, you know, a Muddy Waters track that just knocks your socks off.
Absolutely. And there, we have Sonny Boy Williamson track that kind of shows how contentious things could be.
Oh, I have a rolling, take one. What's the name of this?
Little Village. A little village, mother. Little Village.
Thinking there about a village, you son of a... Nothing the song has got anything to do with a village.
Well, a small town.
Take one, roll it.
Not trapped in a little place.
Almost all of the guys, you know, and groups that we chronicle in this book were really making it up as they went along. There's a great record that was done actually pre-Universal in Chicago at the Civic Opera House by three chromatic harmonica players called the Harmonicats. And they did this instrumental called, you know, Peg of My Heart. It was the first time that echo was really used in an artistic fashion. And by that, we mean they weren't trying to recreate a soundstage. They just were trying to just lay it on and create this otherworldly effect. They put up a sign on the bathroom saying, wet paint, so that nobody would come in the bathroom. But that was the marble bathroom of the Civic Opera House. And that happened all the time. Yeah. You know, in the Motown chapter, yeah, they're taking chains and whipping chains on the floor.
Motown, that was like a thing of pride. And so people would go out of their way to find unusual sounds and bring them in. And, Dancing in the Street is literally a tire chain being whipped against this board on the floor. And you can, once you know that, it's like, yeah, it's a tire chain. It is.
The title is Temples of Sound, and one, in fact, was a temple. It's a Greek Orthodox church.
Right.
This was Columbia in New York.
Columbia's 30th Street, yeah. The dimensions of that room were 100 by 100 by 100, and it was all wood pegs. There was not a nail in the entire space. You know, if you listen to some of the great recordings, especially collaborations between Gil Evans and Miles Davis, you just hear that sense of spaciousness, and it's just gorgeous.
We tend to label the music of the time as regional. You know, there was a Chicago sound, a Memphis sound, a Muscle Shoals sound. It was really a studio, I guess.
Well, a lot of it was, and many of these studios had de facto house bands, as we talk about. People that came in and played day after day after day on hundreds, thousands of tracks. It was a regular day job.
But it was also the engineers.
Mm-hmm. The right. engineers played a big right. part of it. They pilot the session.
And, of course, sometimes it's the artists themselves. I think of innovators like Les yeah. Paul.
Right.
Well, Les Paul was a huge influence on these original pioneers because he right. really, you know, he had some of the first equipment, some of the first 8-track machines for stereo machines were in his basement even before right. they were in studios.
Now, that was at Capitol in the 50s.
At Capitol. Mm-hmm.
And a decade later at United Western in California, you had Brian Wilson and the Beach Boys and... that genius at work.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's the thing. Just to walk into some of these rooms, such as Sun or RCAB, but for me, maybe especially Western 3, where certainly Pet Sounds was recorded and almost the bulk of, you know, the Beach Boys hits, the vibes in that room are just, it's pretty special when you walk in. You could tell something cool was made there.
1, 2, 3.
Yeah, that was the influence of the Four Freshmen, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I could never get the harmonies because I always wanted to sing along. And oh, you try to pick one, and it's, you know, gone. It's off the map, and you're picking up another
well,
one.
Well, you know, that's the amazing thing was not only was he dealing with, you know, theremins and cellos and bass harmonicas, but he was also dealing with 5-part harmonies. That's yeah. I don't know what kind of brain can put that together every day, but he did it.
Jim Kogan and William Bob Clark, co-authors of the book Temples of Sound, Inside the Great Recording Studios. This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Bob Edwards.